You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I am Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August 7th, episode 3747, Good Morning Horse World.
What is your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning. You never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. Knowing that for the rest of my life I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
Welcome back, Mary!
Yay, thanks for having me.
Mary Kitzmiller stops by once every month on the second Thursday, and we chit-chat about all things horse training. And sometimes we delve a little bit into dog training, chicken training, human training. You never know. It is horses in the morning, after all.
Yeah, it's kind of all the same when you get down to brass tacks.
Yeah, learning is learning, right?
Yes.
Yeah, there's commonalities there. And as usual, we're going to be answering questions that are submitted by our listeners. And if you want to be able to submit questions to Mary's show, what you need to do is become an auditor on Patreon. And you guys get the option to submit questions. And to do that, head on over to the Horses in the Morning show page on Horse Radio Network, and there will be a link there to sign up for Patreon. Or you can just go to Patreon and look up, I think it's under Horses in the Morning or Horse Radio Network, I forget which. So you can hop on over there and join the fun. And we start the show each and every month with Mary's training tip. And Mary's training tip is always fascinating and frequently enlightening and gives us light bulb moments, and it's always inspired by something fun and interesting. So what is your training tip and what inspired it this month?
Okay. So if you've delved into the world of natural horsemanship, or you've done a clinic, or, you know, read some of the books that have come out in the last few decades, you've probably heard the phrase, set it up and wait. And if you haven't, that's fine, because I'm going to explain it. I don't know who kind of really originated that. I assume it's probably been in our horsemanship mindset for centuries, but, you know, it could have come from like Ray Hunt, Tom Dorrance era, but you'll see a lot of modern clinicians talk about, they'll tell their students, set it up and wait. So what does that mean? It's a phrase, it refers to this training technique where you're going to put the horse in a position or a situation, and you want to encourage them to find the right answer on their own. So instead of what we tend to like to do, whether it's with our children or our dogs or our horses, is sometimes we want to make everything happen. We want to really manage every step of the way. And there are times when you really need to hold their hand and help them through the whole thing. But if you want a horse that is going to be a well-trained and reliable partner, and a horse that you don't have to micromanage every single step, you really want to start employing this set it up and wait technique as early as possible. So, you know, like if you look at cutting horses, cow horses, those are horses that, like border collies, working dogs, yes, they are responding to cues from the rider, but those horses know what their job is. So the rider is not having to pull them and kick them every step of the way to get that cow. That cow, that horse has learned through breeding, but also through training, you know, I know what to do when the cow goes this way. I know what to do when the cow stops. I know what to do when the cow turns the other way. And you'd have the same thing in your jumpers, your dressage. You know, you want to be able to just lightly key your horse, and the horse is like, got it. I'm taking it from here. So how you do that is with this set it up and wait. So the set it up part is you're going to create a circumstance or give cues, whether they're physical cues like your legs or your reins, or an environmental cue. For instance, we're walking toward a gate. What's that going to mean to my trail horse? And you're setting up the circumstance that's going to guide the horse to a specific behavior that you want to happen. And this might, you know, this might be positioning the horse's body in a certain way or applying subtle pressure. For instance, when I want my horse to engage in a reining spin, the first thing I do is I just take off my inside leg. And my finished trained horse is like, oh, that means we're going to do left spins. So even though I do, we'll cue the horse subtly through that spin, the horse already knows, I know what this is, and he's ready to take over. And the weight part is, so you've set up your circumstances of what you want the horse to do, and you've created your cues or your pressure or positioning in the way. And now, instead of pushing the horse into the maneuver and making everything happen, you are going to wait. You want to give them time to figure it out themselves. And this is what builds all the good neural pathways in their brains and brings all the good chemicals to them and really makes the learning and development in their brain happen. So you wait, you let the horse figure them out. You let them take their time to think, and maybe they'll try this and it was the wrong answer, and you just kind of gently block that answer. And you let them find their way through that little mental maze you set up for them. And then as soon as they find the right answer, you're going to just release any and all pressure you've had, and you're going to reward them. I like to give them a big break just to sit for a few moments afterwards and just bask in all the good chemicals going into their brain right now. Or I can reward them with food if I'm using food or scratches. Or maybe I'll even say, that was such a big thing you did right there, I'm going to get off and loosen your girth for the day because you can't get any better than that. Where I'm going to put you away. So that means the next day, their brain's going to go to that answer quicker and quicker and quicker. And this is going to create a more responsive and willing horse instead of just robot horse. We don't want robot horse. We want a horse that's an active partner and that's happy in his job. This is important for any discipline. You know, if I want to go on a pretty treacherous trail, I want a horse that knows how to pick his way up and down that mountain. If any of you guys have ridden, you know, pretty intense trails, you know how important it is to have a horse that I know how to find the best trail. I know how to settle myself down the hill so we don't go rolling down the hill. So even your pleasure horse, your recreational horse, you want this horse that's responsive, willing, thinking, not reacting, and a horse that's been trained through understanding rather than just pushed to do these maneuvers through fear or resistance. So a good example of this would be if I'm teaching the horse to yield the hindquarters, which is the cornerstone of my program. So how might I set this up? Well, maybe I'll set it up by directing the horse slightly to one side. Maybe I'll apply light pressure with my leg to guide the hindquarters into a certain direction. Now, so I've set up their nose. I haven't yanked their nose to one side, and I'm not kicking with my leg and pushing him to get their hindquarters. I've just set it up to where the easiest way to get me to stop putting this light pressure on the rein and stop putting this light pressure on your hindquarters is to simply step your hindquarters over. So I don't increase pressure unless the horse is just completely clocked out and they're not even listening. But I'm going to wait and let the horse search for it. So maybe they, instead of moving away from my leg, they go into my leg. I'm not going to get upset when that happens. I just kind of keep that leg closed and I show them, nope, that didn't make my leg go away. Maybe they pull against my rein instead of giving to my rein. I just hold my rein steady and I'm like, nope, that wasn't the right answer. And I let, you know, they'll find like, if I pull my head this way, that feels uncomfortable. I don't like that. Maybe I'll soften to the rein. And maybe instead of leaning into the leg, what if I step away from the leg? So how I like to envision it is I've set up a little puzzle box for my horse. And the puzzle box, it's like a house that has lots of doors and windows, but I've closed every door and window in this house except the front door. I've left that open. And instead of trying to push the horse through the house and throw him out the door, I just leave that door open. And every time they try any other window or door, I keep it closed. And I do that with my aids. So, you know, they're just walking through each room and trying to find their way out this window, this door. Can I go out the back door? What about the garage door? What about the bathroom window? Nope, 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 nope. And then finally they see, oh, the front door is wide open. And as soon as the horse steps out into the open sun, I want it to feel so good for them. So as soon as I feel them finding their way out the front door, I release everything and I stop everything so that they just feel that breath of fresh air when they step out into the sunlight. And that's where, of course, the release of pressure is plenty reinforcing. But also I like to, let's just sit here and bask in the front yard in the sunshine because you finally found your way out of the house. Maybe I'll give you a little cookie. Maybe I'll scratch you on the neck. And again, maybe we were trying something really complicated that the horse really had to think his way through. Maybe I'll be like, you know what? That was the most beautiful thing you've done all day. I'm going to get off, loosen the girth, go back and play with your friends. And that is going to teach the horse, even though maybe it took longer than if I had just shoved the horse out the door. You know, I could have put some spurs on and done this and pulled him a little harder and pushed him this way and prodded him this way. And yeah, I could have gotten there real quick. But I'm always going to have to kind of wrestle with that horse to get him to do that maneuver. If I never give him the chance to search himself, I want my horse to feel comfortable searching. As long as he's not doing anything dangerous, you know, obviously if he bolts off, I'm not going to be like, oh, that's not the answer. Figure it out. Oh, wait till you stop bolting. I'm going to control that situation as firm as I need to.
You need to back up a few steps.
Yes, but I will allow within reason, I will lean against this leg, pull against this rein. Maybe I'll try going forward. Oh, nope, that's not the answer. Maybe I'll try going backwards. No, that's not the answer. Oh, it was to go to the left. So once you change your mindset to that and you think of, I'm not making this horse do things so much as I'm giving him brain teasers every day and letting him figure out the way out. Not only is he going to come to conclusions a lot quicker, he's going to be a lot more confident in trying things instead of just being timid and waiting for you to tell him what to do. But it also helps my mindset, because if I think of it that way of, I'm a teacher, I'm giving you a math problem, and I'm going to let you make a few mistakes and figure it out. If you need a little bit more help, I'm happy to step in and help you a little bit more. But I really want you to try and solve this for yourself. Then I find myself getting way less frustrated of, oh, he didn't do it right away. You know, I'm so angry at him. He's not doing it immediately. No, if we need to sit here and figure it out for 5 minutes, we will. And then I know tomorrow it'll only take 2.5 minutes. And then by the end of the week, he's a pro. I give the cue, he does it, we're good.
Yes, that's very interesting. I just see, again, now that you've put this all into words, I went, oh, this is what just happened with Junior James, the young horse, not real keen on getting fly spray. So I wanted to teach him to stand completely free with no halter, just stand there while I spray you, while you don't, mm-hmm. you don't have to move. You don't have to be tied up, nothing like that. And the past 2 days, I pick up my fly sprayer. And as soon as he sees me with the fly sprayer and I say, you want to go get some fly spray? He will follow me outside.
Aww.
And for a while, I had to kind of set him up a little bit, sniff the fly sprayer, squirt the fly sprayer away from you and do those things. So he could settle himself into, oh, I'm getting fly spray now and it doesn't hurt. It's fine. I can just stand here. But the past 2 days, he'll follow me outside and he'll turn himself around to stand a very specific spot and step towards me. Like, I'm ready. Put the fly spray
on. Yeah.
So, and he's much better about it on one side. The other side, he's very, he'll stand still and you can see the little gears going, oh, this is the hard side. But the more confident side, he's gotten to the point now where he quite literally steps towards me. Says, okay, put it on now.
Yeah. And he had the freedom to explore that and find that on his own.
Yes.
And I recently had to do the same thing with a client horse that beginner rider, she was given a horse and the horse is actually wonderful, but we're both going through, she says, well, the horse is supposed to have been ridden, but you know, these people were given the horse before me. So I'm like, okay, looking at her, I'm pretty sure she knows how to ride and she seems real gentle. a horse that's been given away twice is something that let's check everything out before we just hop on.
Yeah.
So the last time I drove out there for a lesson, she said, you know, the flies out here are really bad and she keeps running away when I try to fly spray her. And she was trying to fly spray her just out in the pasture, no halter. I said, okay, well, let's figure this out. So what I normally do in this situation, if a horse is like, I don't like fly spray, instead of wasting my $39 bottle of Piranha or whatever's the top fly spray, I'll get an old spray bottle and fill it with water. That way I can use all the water I want. And I'm not worried about, oh my gosh, I've just dumped all these chemicals onto this horse for an hour. And I haltered the horse, had a nice long lead rope, and I found the place where the horse was mildly uncomfortable, but not terrified. So that was actually spraying out away from her. And I just started just spraying with rhythm, just spray, spray, spray. Now she immediately was like, I don't like that. It makes a weird noise and it's scaring me and I want to move. So if I wanted to micromanage that, what I might do is punish her. Like, don't you dare move. You stand in place. Or maybe like, I'm going to take you to the barn aisle. I'm going to tie you up real tight so you can't move. And now what we're doing, we're in danger of putting the horse into fight or flight, in which they cannot learn. Could I tie that horse's legs together and tie him up and make them stand for fly spray? Absolutely. But tomorrow I have to do the same thing again. And that horse will never be 100% cool with fly spray. They'll only learn that, well, she's going to force me to do it, so I should put up with it. And that's a horse that can be very unpredictable. So what I did is I said, okay, you were allowed to move. I understand. You don't know what this is. This is scary. You're a prey animal. You want to move your feet to feel comfortable. I'm letting you do that. But I'm going to have you do it in a way that's going to both keeps us both alive and keeps you from ripping the lead rope out of my hand, and a way that, you know, is manageable, yet it's going to be a little bit of work for you to move. So maybe you'll find that it's easier for you to stand still. So what I do is I stand by the shoulder, which is the safest place. I give the horse a little bit of slack on the rope between my hand and their halter. So I don't want him to like force them to stand still and hold them down. But if they go forward, I tip their nose toward me so they cannot just walk off or run off. They have to keep their front end relatively still and they're going to yield their hindquarters around. So I'm just, again, this is where I've blocked off certain doors. I'm not letting you go forward and run off. And I'm doing that just by blocking it with my halter and lead rope. Like, no, you can't run off. You can walk in a tiny circle, but they find out after a while when I'm spraying and they're going around and around in a million tiny circles, yielding their hindquarters around, the horse after a while is like, well, I thought this was the answer, but I kind of don't want to stay cranked in this tiny circle. And, you know, that thing's been going, that's been spraying for a while and it hasn't killed me yet. What if I, instead of moving, what if I stand for a second? And that's where I've done the waiting. I went around and around with this horse, just spraying with rhythm. And I'm just spraying the air, spraying the air, spraying the air, spraying the air. Horse is going round and round and round. And I'm letting them think. That's my setup. I've set up the circumstance where there is an answer that makes me stop spraying. You got to figure it out. And the horse will go, I'm tired of walking around. What if I stand still? And that's where I stop spraying. Maybe if a horse was terrified of it, maybe I'll take several steps back and just let him stand there. Maybe I'll pet him. Maybe I'll click and treat, but I want the horse to know that was the answer. Now, if the horse is particularly afraid of the fly spray, they're probably going to move again the next time I do it. I'm not going to go any further. I'm still going to spray the air around them, but this time it's going to take half the time. And then that's going to get incrementally better until I can spray all the air around them and they're fine. And that's when this is your approach and retreat. This is when I'll say, okay, what if I spray across your withers and back? And now they're starting to understand. They might not be totally cool with it, but they're like, okay, I think I know the rules to this game. Stopping equals fly spray stopping. Moving equals nothing happens, but fly spray keeps going. And I'm still creating the situation and guiding the horse toward the door, but I'm allowing them the freedom to move. And what happens if you keep moving your feet? What happens if you stop moving your feet? If you go forward, what happens? You're going to get blocked by the halter. If you run backwards, I won't pull on them to try to keep them from running backwards because I can go backwards as fast as they can go backwards. So if they go backwards, if they back up, I just stay glued to that shoulder and I keep spraying. So the horse is like, okay, I tried to go out the back door, But I'm not getting away from it. And eventually the horse is like, oh, what if I stop? That's it. That's the thing.
There you go. So what might be some things that someone could look for in the horse's body language? Because the place I see these processes going wrong is at the beginning. Mm-hmm. We tend to underestimate or misjudge whether or not the horse is feeling stressed, but still in the area where he can learn, or whether he's genuinely in flight where he's managing it, but he's really not learning. So often you see somebody go through a similar process to this. They have the horse block, but the horse's eyes are giant and wide, and he's snorting and his head is straight up in the air. What are some things that someone might look for in the horse's body language that would indicate that, okay, he's worried about this, but he's still able to learn?
So if you imagine the state of mind in the horse, that looks like a pyramid. And this is actually the diagram used in Martin Black and is it Stephen Peters, the neuroscientist book? They actually draw this out and it helps you kind of envision it. So the bottom, the base of this pyramid is where the horse is in rest and digest. He's like, no, there's no threats on the horizon. I feel comfortable to graze and, you know, lay in the sun. And that's total relaxation. A lot of learning can happen there. And I do a lot of teaching in that area, especially when I'm clicker training. So you're totally fine to teach in that area. I find letting them go up to the middle part of that pyramid, this is where we have a little bit of stress. The horse feels compelled to search for an answer. So like in this case, I've sprayed the fly spray. So the horse is now, okay, I'm out of the bottom part of that pyramid, rest and digest, and I'm alert. And I'm like, what's going on? I need to figure this out. That's the middle part of the pyramid. So the horse, yes, there's still some stress there. The horse definitely feels compelled to search for something. This is where a lot of learning occurs with many trainers programs. And I personally think it's not a bad place to be. You don't want to be there all day, every day. I want to allow the horse to be in that area. And then as soon as they figure it out, I let them come back down to rest and digest. So what you'll start to, so in rest and digest, the signs you're going to see that the horse is in that part of the pyramid, head down, he's maybe looking and chewing, he's, you know, breathing normally, he's got a hind leg clocked, he's just kind of swishing his tail. Maybe he goes down and rolls. It's just a very calm, placid look. You know, the horse, everything's just real loose. They got a big soft eye. You know, if you look at a horse grazing, you'll see it. When they go up into that mid-level, you'll start to see the horse, the head comes up a little bit. Now we've got movement in the feet. We've got a little bit of tenseness through the body. The horse's mouth is very quiet. Like, I'm not going to be looking and chewing right here. And so that's where the horse is like, ah, I don't know what this is. This is, it's like a really complicated math problem. I'm sitting down to the math test and I got to figure this out. So when you're in that zone with the fly spray, that's where I would like to keep them. Now, there's the apex of that pyramid is where you see the horse go into fight or flight. Fight or flight for the horse or any animal is survival. I am only thinking about, how do I live through this? Do I work with horses in that area sometimes? Yeah, sometimes it happens. I'd never try to push them up there purposely, but sometimes I'm riding along and this horse spooks and they're in fight or flight. At that point, I'm managing the situation and keeping us both safe, but I'm not doing a whole lot of teaching because their brain just can't take it in. So I'm usually doing an emergency stop in that situation. I'm just trying to help us both through it where we both stay safe. So if you're safe spraying the fly spray like we're talking about, and your horse goes from, I'm moving my feet around, but I'm still kind of thinking about it too. Now you see their mouth get really tight. And in their face, you'll see that, especially the muscles between their eyes and their nostrils get really tight. You'll see some horses, their bottom eyelid kind of pulls down. And you'll, of course, see the whites of their eyes. Their ears might be flicking forward and back, listening for trouble. Their whole body is stiff like a tin drum, you know, or they're wanting to bolt, or they're wanting to rear, or they're wanting to fly backwards a million miles an hour. You are now in fight flight. If you find yourself there, you know, manage the situation, but it's telling me, okay, I started way too close with this scary thing. Some horses, like Mustangs, I have to start from 50 feet away. I've had Mustangs that were terrified of the clicker, and I had to just like go walk over to the other side of the yard and just like kind of click and click and click until they were like, oh my gosh. Yeah, some Mustangs are real flighty. So you want to find a starting point that generally you're going to get something done. So you have gotten the horse's attention with it, and they are aware of it, and you're in that zone where it's right at the precipice of, the horse has a line where if you cross, it's this threshold of, oh, heck no, I'm out of here. You don't want to cross that line, but you want to start getting to that line. And you'll be able to, by doing this, move that line further and further back. So maybe the first day with that Mustang, they were so frightened of me even being within 50 feet of them. Okay, that's the line. I'm going to gently start trying to pick up that line and move it closer and closer and closer until obviously the end goal is I'm riding bareback and bridleless across the pasture and it's majestic and everything. And it's different for every trainer.
It is. And depending on where you're at, for example, with a Mustang, he's discovering new things versus horse that is afraid of, since we're using that example today, afraid of a fly sprayer. It could be you need to move the line way back. It's like, well, you're afraid of the sprayer. Well, you know, it could be that that horse is actually over threshold in flight mode when he sees the fly spray, which is what I discovered. As soon as James saw the fly sprayer coming to him, he would go into flight brain, despite the fact that he wasn't actually running away, because he came with the, when somebody is holding on to you or you're being tied, you daresn't run. He was, you know, you tie him up and you leave him there till they can't move anymore. So he would shut down in that he wasn't running, but he also wasn't learning. He was just, you know, he planted all 4 feet and he wouldn't move. But if he was not confined, tied up, you couldn't get within 20 feet of him with a fly sprayer. So that's what we needed to fix. So I realized after about a week, obviously, I've got something wrong here, because he'll let me fly spray just fine when he's tied up. But if he's not tied up, I can't get within 15 feet. So I needed to move that line way, way, way back. I had to get to the point where I could have a fly sprayer in my hand and walk around the stall and walk up to him in the field and say, oh, it's a fly sprayer. You're not going to terrify me with it. Because he looked at that as the existence of the fly sprayer to him was negative, period. Because every time it got near him, he got tied up. And it's, oh my God. So I learned that I had to back up a lot further than I thought I did.
And you're not making a mistake by backing up. Some people are like, oh, the horse will learn the wrong thing. It's like, if I feel in my bones, like this is not a good place to be, I don't care if some other guy would be way more bold about it. I have to be where I feel comfortable in my knowledge and in my own safety. For instance, you know, I mentioned the line of where you're willing to drive the horse to is different for every trainer. I know plenty of trainers who use this method, but they have crossed the line and are into just flooding the horse where, yeah, you're running around, but I can run just as fast as you run. I'm going to, you know, we're going to sweat when we do this and da, 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 da. I won't go into whether that's right or wrong. That's just some people's they're okay if the horse really goes around and kicks up a lot of dust. And that's how I used to be. But not only did I find that that's just not what I prefer. I don't prefer to put the horse quite that close to the line of being into flight or flight. But also, as I've gotten older, I'm like, I don't want to run around all that much. I'd like you to stand still. So I've been able to find that zone where the horse is still in learning mode, but I'm not going to create a lot of movement, if any, because my knees hurt. I don't want to chase you around all day. And I know trainers, especially in the positive reinforcement field, who do kind of what you're talking about reminds me of this. I know a trainer who, what she'll do is, let's say you know there's going to be some scary things your horse is maybe not accustomed to or definitely has a fear of. What they'll do is, while they're working with their horse on other things, they'll hang a bunch of different stuff on the fence. And a lot of the stuff will be pretty neutral, and some of the stuff will be kind of scary. So what you could do is, like, maybe I'll set this brush on the fence or this towel, and it's just there. Maybe I'll hang a small tarp over the fence, and oh, the fly spray is going to be on this corner post, and I'm not even gonna touch it today. We're just working and it's there. And we'll spend a few days where the horse just gets used to it being there. Maybe when I'm working, I'll give the horse a break and I'll just kind of go and pick up the fly spray bottle and put it back on the post and then come back to working. So the line is wherever you feel comfortable, because, you know, not everyone wants to Wild West this thing and wants to cowboy up. I know where my limit is, where my cowboy skills don't go that far as someone else's. So I know where I'm going to fail, and I know where I would prefer my horses to be. So that's going to be the line for you to figure out.
From early morning feedings to late night barn checks, horse care follows a rhythm, and Chewy helps you keep in step. Whether it's grooming for that shine, gear to protect every ride, or the supplements that power their stride, Chewy delivers what you need and when you need it. Fast shipping, flexible auto ship, and trusted brands mean you can focus on the feel of the reins, not the stress of the supply run. Your horse counts on you, and you can count on Chewy to match the beat of your barn life for every season and every reason. Start your order today at chewy.com/equine. And who is our first question contributed by a listener?
Okay, we have this one coming from Nicole, and she wants tips on how to encourage long, consistent forward movement. She says, I like doing equithons, which is an endurance subset, with my horse. So we need to be able to trot for long periods of time. And often in training, she doesn't want to put in the effort to trot beyond a handful of strides at a time. So that is a really great question. So the first thing, you know, obviously for endurance, sustained trotting is going to be absolutely key. And we do know, if we have any experience in that field, that it's going to require some conditioning, both physically and mentally. So I have some horses that are fit enough to do it, but they just don't want to. So I have to meet them where they're at and build their mental endurance as well as their physical endurance. So the first things first, out of the way, most people understand this: check for physical issues first. Check for, especially if you have a horse that was doing pretty good with it, and then now all of a sudden this week they don't want to do it. So make sure you've got your saddle fit out of the way, that they can easily move their shoulders. Make sure their back is in pretty good shape. Check for hoof soreness. I have had some horses that, I had a horse in particular a few years ago that was just trotting real post-legged, like, you know, just not really moving out, and their feet looked totally fine. Everything looked fine. Didn't feel a pulse in their feet. Legs looked good. Everything good. But I noticed between their two heel bulbs, there was a little, and their foot was dry looking, no smell, nothing, but there was a little crack between the two bulbs, the two heel bulbs. And when I went to investigating that, I kind of took a hoof pick and just lightly poked at it, and my hoof pick sunk all the way down into that crack. And the horse was like, he would have thought I stuck a knife in there. And so I found out, even though it was invisible initially, I found out this horse had a deep infection in there, and that can be havoc. That feels very painful for their heels. And so I really had to root that out with lots of treatment. And so even though the horse, I didn't see any thrush anywhere when I pick out their feet, but I, you know, if you're seeing those cracks in there, that's not typically normal. So sometimes you want to, and so if that infection is really bad, you can actually squeeze their bulbs, the heel bulbs, and feel how soft it's gotten, because it's just this raging infection in there. So you might even have to go to a vet if that gets bad enough. But once I was able to solve that, they're like, oh, I like trotting again. So, you know, we're going to check for all of that thing, muscle tension, ulcers, joint stiffness, teeth. I recently had to send a training horse home. He looked healthy, fit as a fiddle, shiny, beautiful, gorgeous. Mentally, he was wonderful to work with. but I also couldn't get him to move out, especially going from trot to canter. And he was always crossfiring in the canter. And I used my context clues. I'm like, this horse is very well bred. Typically, well-bred horses don't crossfire, meaning he's got the wrong lead and back when he's cantering. Typically, they don't do that as often as he's doing it. If they're built the way he's built and bred the way he's bred, like why are you very, because crossfiring is uncomfortable. Horses typically want to be in the correct lead. So I rode him for a long time thinking, but you look good. You look great. You know, and we did send him home once early on to have him checked out by the vet and all the basic lameness stuff. No, he's fine. He's totally fine. Had body work done on him and checked that out. And then I had taken a long break off of him because I was out of town for a while. And when she brought him back, again, same thing. He was mentally great, ready to go, real good, everything. But I couldn't get him to move forward. He was crossfiring. And then a couple of times he tripped in the hind end and it just looked wrong. And up to this point, I had gotten off and kind of done like the basic EPM. What if I pull on your tail? And he passed that. He was okay. But I ended up calling the owner and I'm like, I'm really thinking something's off. It could be way high up. Maybe it's in his pelvis, and I brought up EPM because of the few things that I had seen that made me think of it. And turns out he did get tested and he does have some markers. It wasn't full blown, but he has enough evidence in his testing results. And then the vet also did a tail pull and he wasn't satisfied by the tail pull. So the horse is getting treated for that before he comes back. But the problems were so slight that it wasn't like he was falling over and he didn't have the EPM look, you know, kind of the bad top line, you know, thin. They were so slight and it took me months to figure out, okay, this isn't personality. So again, throwing that out there, sometimes you really have to dig down deep and doing your detective work there. So the other thing I like to do for trotting is I like to ride with a purpose. I want to give my horse a reason to go forward. So I do this with my colts a lot that just aren't used to trotting out, or with my lazy ponies. I do this a lot with Remy because he is also lazy and he does not like to just go in a straight line for any kind of distance. So I like to pick a target point. It could be a tree, it could be a fence post, it could be a cone that I set up, and I'm going to trot right to it. I'm not going to do a lot of like collection or anything like that because a horse that doesn't want to go forward, you don't want to bother with collection right now. You need to get that gas pedal fixed. So I'm going to trot them straight to that point and I'm going to do as minimal aids as I can. All I'm going to do with my hands is just keep their nose pointed up at that target. And once I get to that point, I'm going to rest there. Every time I get to that target point, I'm going to rest and let them rest for a few moments. And then I'm going to look across my pasture or my arena or wherever I'm going and say, okay, now I'm going to trot to that fence post or tree or cone. And then I'm going to rest there. And you're giving your horse a bit of a job. You're going to give him the idea. We're not just trotting for trotting. And you're also letting him know there's going to be an end to this. You know, once you get to the point, you get to rest or maybe you get a reward. I heard a great story once about an endurance rider who she would condition her horse on a specific hill or kind of a mountain type thing. And she'd trot her horse all the way up it. And once they got to the top, she would rest with her horse and they would split a peanut butter sandwich between her and the horse. So that horse's trot became amazing after a while.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
I love picking a point and going to it. This is so good. Or, you know, if you do a little cross training and, you know, maybe there's a cow in your pasture and you tell the horse, go get that cow. And you give the horse the job to follow the cow wherever it goes. The horse, after a while, will take control and they're like, I kind of like following this cow. So I find that rewarding forward with rest, especially on your lazier horses, is so good for building up their mental energy to trot. So, you know, horses, they're, even though your horse might be bred to go and he might be, you know, totally physically fit and conditioned in the wild, he knows that energy is sacred and he needs to conserve it, or else maybe I spent a long time running away from that leaf and I wore out all my energy. Oh, and now a mountain lion's coming over the corner. Now I really need to run and I don't have it. So horses tend to really want to conserve energy by nature. So again, trot with energy to a goal point. It could, maybe it's only 20 feet away. And the instant, so you're, you know, pick your target, trot toward it. And as you're trotting toward it, what you can also do, because I know this horse has some issues with trotting for more than a few strides. So try to get the horse to trot. And even if you have an endpoint in mind, trot the horse toward it. But if you feel on the way to that goal, all of a sudden you feel this horse for like two strides, maintains a solid trot with me without me having to bother her, stop, drop the reins, let her rest. I had to do this with my Mustang Dougal, because Dougal was the biggest deadhead as far as energy ever. I think Dougal is like 99% draft horse. And I tried to use pressure and release with Dougal at first. And I very quickly found if I want him to trot, I'm going to have to beat him with something, because he wasn't particularly spooky. And I'm like, I don't want to do that, because now you're really going to hate trotting because I have to bully you into it. So what I did is I took two pole bending poles that I had. And so it's just a little PVC pole that sticks, stands straight upright. And I taught him to target those things with the clicker. So every time you go and touch this one, click treat, then we turn around, go to the other one, click treat, then we turn around, go to the other one, click treat. And then eventually what happened is I could only get him to walk from pole to pole, because that's all I could get out of him. It was a miracle he was even walking. But as we started going, he was like, I'm kind of excited to get to the next pole. We didn't get a trot, but his walk went from slow ambling, and I'd feel a few strides pick up, and he'd do this big, beautiful ground covering walk. And I would capture that with a click, you know, before he had a chance to slow back down. I was like, oh, that stride right there, that also gets cookies. So even though we didn't make it all the way to the target gave him something to go toward. It made him excited without me having to kick on him. And his stride increased for a few strides. And I was like, brilliant. Again, we got to find a starting point. Dougal could not have done, I couldn't have just gotten on him and say, we're going to do a 50-mile endurance ride today. For Dougal, his 50-mile endurance ride in the beginning was, can you walk two or three strides without me having to bug the crap out of you? And that's our starting point. And then next week, those strides became bigger and bigger. Why? Because every time I feel those shoulders loosen up, I will reward him. If you don't want to do treats, totally fine. But just stop him, drop the reins, scratch his neck, sit there for 30 seconds, and then say, okay, now go forward. And then the next week, he could do 10 or 20. And then after a while, the walks got so good and big and powerful that I could just barely push him. And he tipped over into trot. And as soon as he did that, I was like, brilliant. So if your horse can't go more than three strides at the trot, set a goal a little bit further back there. Maybe say, I want to get the most beautiful extended walk I've ever gotten on you. And start there. Even though we know the end goal is we got to go 50 miles, you still need to start where the horse is at. I'm going to add to this, don't nag with your legs. If you're constantly, especially when getting a horse to go forward, we're afraid. If I want my horse to trot, I'm afraid my horse is going to walk before I ask. So what we tend to do is we keep our legs on him in the trot. And I'm like, kick, 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 so you don't break down to walk. And the horse inevitably will still do it. So all I'm doing is desensitizing my horse to the legs. Ask clearly for the trot. I'm going to, and once the horse is trotting, I'm not going to completely rest and relax, because for me, that means the horse should stop with me, but I'm going to relax my legs and keep them quiet. My seat will still be asking for trot, but I'm not squeezing or kicking with my legs. So I ask very clearly, I get that trot. Once they get trot, I release with my legs to let them know, oh, you did trot, that was good. If they break gait early, I allow that. I allow you to break down. If they break down, I ask for trot again. I say, nope, that was the wrong thing. Again, we're setting this up so the horse can figure it out. So I allow to see what happens if I break down. Well, I'm going to add that leg in there and I'm going to make you go again. And maybe you need to, you know, give them a little bump or, you know, have a little crop or something, but I'm going to give them that clear re-cue. As soon as they go back into trot, I go back to my neutral where I'm not really keeping that leg on. I'm still posting with my seat, but I'm not trying to like shove and push the horse forward. The horse is quickly going to learn, you know what? I don't get bothered as much if I just stay in my gait. The other thing you're going to do, and this is great for your endurance horses, is you're going to use your transitions. So interval training, which I'm sure you're probably accustomed to if you're doing any kind of endurance. So maybe I trot 20 seconds, walk 10 seconds, trot 20 seconds, trot 30 seconds, walk 10 seconds, and build duration. And again, mentally, this is going to give your horse, your lazy horse, some comfort. Because if that horse thinks, she's going to make me trot for 20 minutes, he's not going to try for you. But if he starts to learn, if I just give her 20 seconds a good trot, she can give me a little rest and we're going to be okay. So you're going to both increase their fitness and their focus, and she's not going to dread endless trotting. And then, of course, incorporating different terrain. Some horses kind of are, you know, stiff and slow in the arena, but you get them out on the pasture and they're like, oh, this is really fun. So set up different, you know, maybe do some downhold slopes carefully, you know, within reason. Do some open fields. Get a partner horse out there. So have your friend go with you and, you know, use your horse's herd mentality to be where I don't want to be left behind. I want to follow this horse. I do that a lot for really lazy colts in the colt starting phase. If I can have someone on a broke horse start trotting around, all of a sudden that colt's confidence builds up and he's like, oh, I want to follow that guy around. So I'm making it easier. I'm working smarter, not harder, where I'm not having to constantly fight to get that horse into it. The other thing you can do is you can keep some mental variety in there. So maybe today I'm going to trot target to target, but maybe tomorrow, why don't I throw some obstacles out here and we'll cross some obstacles, or I'm going to use natural obstacles. Like, why don't we go across this creek, or why don't we do a figure eight around these two trees? So do like incorporating that, the long distance moving out with, okay, now let's work on opening and closing a gate. It gives your horse a little break from having a trot, 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 mental variety. You can always tackle this stuff from the ground and work on it from the ground and doing some lunging. I would say a good idea with all of this is to maybe keep a little notebook, like how long were we able to trot yesterday? And not only will that let you know, okay, here's my goal for tomorrow, but if you're at all getting frustrated, you can flip back to day one and see, oh, we only got 3 strides of trot last week. Well, actually, we're doing pretty good. You know, write down some observations. How far did we trot? How willing was she to offer it? Where did she start to fade in the ride? So you know, okay, after about 15 minutes, the horse is done. So, you know, kind of a good place to have a quitting point, because you don't, when the horse checks out, now you're in trouble. So, you know, okay, 15 minutes, she's absolutely done with the ride. So I know I'm going to go for like a really good 10 or 12 minute ride today with the goal of making it longer and longer over time. So to summarize, you want forward to be the easiest option. Forward gets her rest, and she's also responsible for maintaining her own gait once you've asked.
Ta-da! Perfect!
As horse owners, we spend a lot of time on the road. Let U.S. Rider help keep you covered. Our equestrian motor plan offers fast, reliable, nationwide service from our highly trained roadside assistance team. 24/7 coverage for both you and your horse. Membership includes horse trailer servicing, towing, flat tire repair, even on dual wheels, battery assistance, and lockout service on any vehicle in your plan. We also have your equine companions covered with referrals for emergency vet services, farrier referrals, and emergency stabling assistance. Get peace of mind on the road for you and your horse. Join U.S. Rider today.
And who's next on the hit parade?
We have a question from Katie. She says, I have a 20-year-old Quarab, quarter horse Arab cross, came from a Western pleasure background. The daughter rode him for years at, you know, some local shows, barrels, poles. So she did some speed events with him. But now he's mainly a trail horse, and they're starting competitive trails. So he's very broke in his maneuvers, very handy broke. Here's the issue, though. On trails, if there's a lot of horses or if he's amped up because they're on the way home, he'll toss his head to the point where she almost gets smacked in the face by this horse's head. So that's some pretty severe tossing. He'll also jig on the way home, which is kind of like this trot, walk, fast pace, sort of like a Pasofino pace, but not smooth at all. I don't like jigging either. Usually she can work through it or redirect him to a tiny canter if he just won't walk, which is more comfortable than jigging. Or she'll do side passing. She'll try to do side passing or doing other maneuvers, which is often something I recommend, like give him a little job to do. But she says that gets him more worked up. She tries to do a quick, you know, keep a loose rein, but doing a lot of pull and release. So that'd be something similar to a half halt. And a few weeks ago, someone we were riding with raced past us, which triggered him to bolt after her. And I had all I could do to slow him down and stop him. It was so unnerving, feeling so out of control. He's very competitive, wants to be up front when he's triggered. She rides him in a futurity bit. I'll have to look up what that is. But I'm open to other options. I'm sure futurity bits may be like some sort of shanked bit. What are your tips? I'm considering using a running or German martingale for this issue. And that would be she would be wanting to do that for the head tossing. So obviously you don't want to be smacked in the face by the horse. Ridden him in a tie down, but hate to use it every time. Especially, I would say no tie downs on the trail, because there have been horror stories of someone riding a horse through water. They didn't realize we're so deep and the horse could not lift its head to save itself. So no for the trails. And I don't like tie downs anyway, but plus, a tie down, this horse is a speed horse. So, you know, if she uses a tie down, he's like, we're at the barrel race, is what she's saying in the question. So we do have access to a round pen or open field for schooling. So this is a common issue that many riders face. And I want to first off say, the friend who raced past you on the trail, not your friend. There are groups of people I know to ride with. If I want to go Ricky Bobby style and go fast, and I have the horse that to do it. So there are times when I go on the trail and it's fun and we're galloping the whole time. And there are times when I'm on a little bitty baby horse and this is their first trail ride and I don't want to screw them up. And I would hope that the people that are going with me on the trail are considerate of that. I have some friends that like to go fast all the time, but are respectful enough. If they know that the horse I'm on is green or having issues, they know, do not race past. Not without asking, at least. You know, I'll have some friends where they're like, hey, mind if I canter on down? And I know I'm on a horse that can handle. I'm like, go for it. I'll meet you up there. But that's a big part of this issue, is you want to make sure you're riding with people that get it and that can, you know, can help you through it and stay your pace and not trigger your horse. Because now,
ding, 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 ding. That is no different than the fly spray problem. All you're doing is reinforcing the horse says, this is stressful for me. I need to be in front. And when I go on a trail ride or I'm going towards home, horrible things happen. Because from their point of view, being left behind is horrible. That's just reinforcing it. So yes, ding, 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 ding.
Yes. So, you know, now that this horse has been reinforced with this a few times, which is hard not to have happen on the trail, because no matter what, the horse knows at the end of the day, at the end of that trail, his saddle's coming off, he's going to be with his buddies, he's going to go home. So no matter how much I try to do, there is always going to be that reinforcement at the end of the trail. So, you know, this can be a really tricky problem to deal with. So, you know, what your horse is dealing with is they've got the anticipation and the adrenaline. We know it's triggered by group excitement and by heading home or others racing past. We have a horse who's dealing with an old job and now we've got new expectations. The head tossing is a symptom of the tension and the resistance and the bracing. Same thing with the jigging. It's just that all that emotional energy leaking out because he can't contain it in his body. And that's where the bolt is coming from. With the gear, and I'm not opposed to trying different training gear and bits and stuff, but if you're just going to gear, you're only managing symptoms. So you don't, that's not going to be the problem solver. It can help you stay safe. I am not opposed to, I feel better when I use this bit, or this just really, my horse really likes this bit better. You know, do that within reason, but you want to avoid relying on it. You don't want to be in the mindset of, I can only do this if I have this magic bit in, because I'll tell you, at some point, magic bit's not going to work anymore. And then you're in an arms race with your horse and you're trying to get a bigger bit and a bigger bit. And now you've got bicycle chain in his mouth, which I know you won't do, but that it leads down that vicious cycle. So this is not about trying to suppress your horse, because we can't physically do that. No matter how much I try to hold my horse down, he's physically stronger than I am. So we want to think in terms of channeling energy and retraining expectations. He's reverting to what he knows in these high energy situations, and we need to teach him a new job that requires, you know, him managing his own regulations and not just him doing what you say. So, you know, the good thing is you've pointed out his triggers, so we know where his triggers are. So what you want to do to retrain this is you want to get ahead of the adrenaline. You don't want to be behind it. So once he's triggered, once the horse is dashed back, once he knows he's on his way home, or once he's in a large group of horses and he wants to get to the front, you are just in damage control. You know, you're just trying to survive the bolt or whatever he's doing. So you want to start managing his brain before he amps up. So what I would do, a lot of times you can redirect this on the trail, but I'm thinking you need to build work by yourself in either your round pen or your arena or your field by yourself, or maybe even, you know, a small trail by yourself if you feel safe. You know, use common sense, let people know where you're going, when you're going to be back, all that kind of stuff. But start there before he can really be triggered. And you're going to do early redirects. So I know you said side passing, all that stuff just amps him up more. I would say that's because we're trying that when he's already kind of, like we talked earlier, in that fight or flight. Like, I'm just thinking about going. So as soon as you feel tension building, so this could be ears pinning forward, his head beginning to raise, he's holding his breath. You'll feel it in his barrel. Like, it feels like you're riding on a metal barrel. That's when you're going to do very subtle tasks. So one thing I love to do is a serpentine down the trail. And this is a one rein at a time exercise. And I like to call it an exorcism for the horse, because it gets rid of a lot of demons. So it's very simple. I left rein, go left, right rein, go right. And I'm imagining this horse, when you start the serpentine, he's going to be going, it'll be like a log down a river, just really straight and kind of more zigzaggy than soft and smooth and bendy. You're not going to get that immediately with this horse. And again, best place to practice this is in a very controlled, quiet situation. So see how soft you can get that horse through his whole body by turning right, then left, use your legs with gentle cues, ask for, you know, get a little softness at first. So what I tend to do is I'll go left until I feel just a subtle change. And then I go to the right until I feel just a subtle change, and then back to the left. You could do this with obstacles. You know, I like to do this around trees in my pasture, and I just make this mundane and monotonous. Left and right and left, in a calm situation to start with. Left, right, left, right. And after several rides of doing this, you'll feel that horse's body start to soften, and he's not going to be so stiff and tense anymore. So again, train this at home so that he's very soft and good with it, so that when the energy goes up, you know he's going to get stiff, but we've trained so much of that softness at home. Hopefully I can get him back into that softness. What I also like about the serpentine is he does still get to go forward. And it is something great if you're on a more narrow trail where, you know, I can't, you know, do a bunch of small circles or something, or we'll drop off this canyon. You can just go left of the trail, right of the trail, left of the trail, right of the trail. The other good thing about the serpentine, and again, I'm not trying to put his head down, I'm not trying to hold him back, I'm just bend left, bend right, bend left, bend right, very lateral. The other good thing about this is if it all gets to be too much, if I'm in a bend, I'm halfway to a one rein stop. And if you haven't practiced and taught one rein stops, I would do that now. I could go into how to do that. That's going to be a whole another hour of me yakking. So I would say, you know, find a source, look up One Rain Stops and, you know, get real knowledgeable about how to teach it and practice. It's an emergency drill. So you need to practice it when the horse is listening to you so that when it's an emergency, it's not the first time he's ever done this. So there's all sorts of early redirects you can do before he even gets to that zone. So I would be working on these on the start of the trail, you know, practice those when you're going away and it's, he's not so tense. And then as you come back, hopefully he's a little bit more responsive. So, you know, again, serpentines, lateral flexions, you could do lots of transitions, walk, trot, walk, trot, walk, trot. What I will sometimes do, and again, we're not doing this as a punishment. Sometimes because we're scared, and I have totally done this, or we're angry, we'll get tense with the horse. And if I'm scared, I tend to like really pull on that horse too fast. Well, the horse is already kind of bonkers in his brain. And if you are jerking on him, pulling on him, try to slow him down right now, then he's going to get more tight. So you got to work on being very slow, but firm with your hands. So I will take a hold of that horse as much as I need you to control him. But I try to do everything like my hand is moving through water to pick up that rein. So not in a punishment way, you're just redirecting and no matter what, you're trying to stay calm as you're doing this. So, you know, like I said, lateral flexions, transitions, tiny circle. Sometimes what I will do, if my horse wants to run out ahead of the crowd, I will let him make his way to the front. And then when he gets there, I'm going to bend him around in a small circle. And we're just going to work on going around and around in the circle until the horse has passed us again. Once they passed us, I'll allow him to shoot out front and then I'll do that again. And this is going to probably take thousands of times. And again, you want some patient friends with you. Of the horse realizing, man, every time I get what I think I wanted, which was to be out front, I have to do harder work. And again, work on those soft circles at home when he's not already in fight or flight. As far as, you know, if you're worried about him bolting, you want to really start to recognize the shift before it happens. So in those cases where I feel he's thinking about bolting, I will redirect right away, One Rein Stop. Or in some cases, maybe I'm like, you know what? I know this is going to happen. It's too much. I'll get off. I don't have a problem getting off. I don't want to end up in a bad way. So you want to ride real relaxed yourself and give your horse a chance to be relaxed and smooth and have a loose rein. But in my brain, I am looking at every sign I can to make sure, because if the horse is in a deadbolt, stopping him is very difficult. I want to stop him when I first feel that tense for them to, you know, they kind of are in the starting gate and they first do that. I'm like, no, immediately One Rein Stop. So you want to get really savvy about being able to use that, to manage that. So, you know, like again, we said the side passings and stuff. You said if they're only revving them up, they're not really serving the right purpose. So back to what I said earlier, you're going to use small, soft changes in your gait or direction. Bending and yielding. Side passing might be a little too much because you're asking the horse to go pretty hard sideways. And if the horse is already nervous and is not soft, that's going to be pretty advanced maneuver. So you can do a leg yield instead and allow them to, okay, you're still going forward, but you're moving again, sort of like our
covering more ground. Yeah.
Yeah. So in his mind, yeah. I'm still going forward, but I also have some control and yeah. And so all of those things, you just want to keep him engaged, even when he's not triggered. So don't do these things just when stuff starts to get hard. Yeah. Yes. So the perfect place to practice is on the way out and just like, hey, are you listening? Are you soft? Are you listening? Are you soft? So
I rode this horse for 11 years. This exactly describes Nigel.
Yeah.
One of the things I found early on with him, once I discovered, you know, first time I took him out on a trail ride in a group, I discovered it, that he is a competitive horse. I made sure that whenever I went on group trail rides, I asked the group, I have a horse that walks really fast. He needs to be in the front for at least the first hour of the ride at a walk. Are y'all okay with that? If not, I just didn't go on that group ride.
Yeah. Yeah. And
that's I did that for a very long time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
because I need to untrain it. He anticipated it. He said, oh, we're going on a trail ride. We gallop. We go fast. I get wound up. So he would get off the horse trailer and he was already wound up just getting off the horse trailer. So I had to retrain his brain just by repeatedly going on these trail rides that would be anywhere from 1 to 3 hours that we walked the entire ride. Now, his walk was as fast as every single quarter horse's trot. And I just reached out to everybody and said, hey, this is the case. We're going to be walking and we're going to get way out in front of you guys at a walk. I'll just stop and wait for you to catch up, because he was cool with that. And it took a little while, but he got to the point where we could walk and do a little bit of trot on trail rides, and he became manageable. Now, if we broke into a canter, sorry, game's over, but he's a racehorse. I had to meet him in the middle somewhere. You know, so there is hope, but this is a very, very difficult problem to manage. My heart goes out to you. It's going to be long and slow and a little frustrating.
Yes, you're in the long haul. And yeah, I do want to add in there, I want my friends to be considerate of me, but I also don't want to drag everyone down. So I'm not going to take this horse on a fox hunt and be like, everyone slow down. I'm going to really, you know, and if I'm on the trail and I realize it's way too much and it might endanger other people, or I'm going to be like, you know what, I'm going to head back. I'm going to get off and walk my horse back if I have to. Thanks, guys.
Take a pal with you who's willing to do that, who's willing to take the escape route. Yeah.
So you're going to have to really plan these rides in advance. And as far as gear, you will have people say, I never use any training. And me personally, I don't use martingales or things like that. The only bits I have outside of the snaffle are for my horses that, like, by the rules of the show, they need to be shown in this bit. However, this is a 20-year-old horse with baked-in habits. So I am not, if you find, like, I would say not German martingale, because, yes, a German, now he is used to a tie down, but German martingales can really trap a horse. And if he says, he's trying to toss his head, and if he says, I'm trapped, maybe he backflips instead. So there is a proper way to use them, but I would say that's a lot. And so, you know, a run, if you feel he's throwing his head dangerously, as a temporary measure, as you're working through this, I wouldn't be opposed to putting a running martingale on there. You don't want to use it to tie his head down. He shouldn't feel resistance from that running martingale if his head is in a natural position. So you don't want to tie his head down, but it's a safeguard to where if he does go, I'm going to smack you in the face with my head, you can prevent that. And, you know, or you can try different bits. There's, like, Myler has several bits that are kind of like, they'll have a sort of short shank with that comfort relief mouthpiece. And they even have some that kind of have a little bit of leverage with, like, a noseband deal. And so I don't mind if you play around with your tools. Just know that I'm doing this to manage, not to cure. And just be careful if you're unfamiliar with the equipment, because some of these can cause some big reactions in a horse if you've never used it before.
You don't want to overbit. Yeah. Well, as usual, we're plumb run out of time. Where can folks appropriately stalk you online, find you to do a clinic, have you help them train their horse, etc.?
MaryKitzmiller.com or Mary K. Kitzmiller on Facebook is my personal page, or Mary Kitzmiller Horsemanship also on Facebook for my business page.
Dun, dun, dun. And auditors, stick around. We're going to do a little post show. We're going to talk about puppies. In the meanwhile, if you're not an auditor, tune in again tomorrow for more fun and games with horses in the morning.